We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Arsenal win in League Cup, and much like Haley's Comet, this is the year Manchester City has decided not to win it, so it's still on. This is the Arsenal Vision post-match podcast. My name's Elliot Smith, the Black Man Twitter, Yankee Gunner. That's right, once every 72 years, Manchester City decides they don't want to win the League Cup, and this is one of those years. They were knocked out by West Ham on penalties, quite hilariously. It was great. I really enjoyed the way that shook out. Now, that doesn't mean it's easy. There's lots of good, challenging fixtures ahead that remain, cup ties waiting for us in the quarterfinals. We will find out about that maybe when you're listening to this or after when you're listening to this, but as of right now, we don't know it yet. But Arsenal are through, a 2-0 victory over Leeds. And I think one that could be pretty interesting to discuss, because we got to see some players that many of us have forgotten or would like to forget play for Arsenal, players like Kolasinac and Elneny perhaps. But we got to see players that there's still a lot of interest around. Certainly Martinelli and Pepe are two we are going to discuss. Eddie Nketiah scored a wonder goal that was very close to being a disaster. And we had a Benjamin White performance for the ages, a Callum Chambers goal. So yeah, all things being equal, I think a little more to discuss than the average League Cup. And the winning streak carries on, and that's great, and we're still basking in the glow of the hilarious 5-0 defeat of Manchester United at home to Liverpool. If you want more on that, we did our Premier League roundup with Clive and Lewis Ambrose on the Patreon side, discussing them, the top three, the state of the race for the top four, which is now a thing that I think is back on for us. So all of that is there if you want it, but most importantly, you're here. We love you, and so is Tim. You can find him on Twitter, at Stoberto. Hello, Timmy!
Hello there.
I am not ridiculing your name by saying that. That is what you have typed into the little window where I see you appear in the studio. So it was a self-ridicule, I think, in this case.
Indeed. I can confirm that.
Yep. I would say that self-ridicule is always the safest way to go, because it sort of cuts the legs out of anyone who might have thought to do it subsequently. Paul is just here as Paul, so I will introduce him as Paul. You can find him on Twitter. Pause my pants. I'll pause.
Woohoo.
Woohoo, indeed. Come on, man. You can bring a bigger woohoo for the win in the League Cup than that. Maybe woohoo. Keeping your powder dry for Saturday morning was good. Was fun. Well, so here's the interesting thing. I find myself in a very strange position. And dear listener, as you will know, I am just so attuned to picking out all of the positives of a performance. And yet I find myself drawn to two of the potentially less positive features of this game that I really do think are hotly debated and important to discuss. And that would probably be, pretty obviously, the performances of Pepe and Martinelli that leave something to be desired, and they're being talked about a lot. But because we won, and it was a fun occasion, let's just push that back slightly and go with some of the positives. And Tim, I think one of the real positives is we continue to see from Benjamin White, a player who seems to be growing into this role as being, one of the leaders in the team, one of the guys who's going to be in there as often as he's available, it seems. And it was later announced that I think Pablo Mari had a stomach bug and would have played otherwise, but Benjamin White did play, did leave himself with that bug later in the game. So no injury there. That's good. But just a really, really fun performance from him, doing the things that I think were attractive about him when we sort of scouted him in the summer, which is carrying the ball out past that first line of defense and really setting things on a plate for the attackers. So if you had to pick out one of the starting players who really impressed you, is he the first name?
He'd be very close, yeah. And actually, after the Palace game, because I really wasn't impressed with his part in one of the goals Palace scored, where I thought, God, you've got the David Luiz thing where if you back
off
anymore,
you'll be
hailing a cab on the Holloway Road if you keep dropping off anymore. And I wasn't that impressed by that. And I had a discussion in another Arsenal WhatsApp group I'm in. Sorry, guys, I've been cheating on you. But what are you going to do? Where I kind of said, has he been a bit shit so far, or am I being really, really harsh? Like, not shit, but like, just quite average. And I wasn't that impressed with, I mean, I was still kind of, I think, a little bit hurt, shall we say, by that goal. But I was kind of saying, I haven't seen any of this passing or this kind of driving out from the back that we're supposed to get with this guy. And if he can't defend as well, then what have we spent the money on? But like, I wasn't in full meltdown mode. I was kind of, you know, this is still very early. You know, he's forming a new partnership, a new club and everything like that. So I wasn't in write-off stage, but I was thinking, so far I've been kind of unimpressed. That's really changed the last two games. Like, that's really switched around the last two games. I thought he was excellent against Villa, you know, being really aggressive and kind of coming out of the line. And not backing off, doing the exact opposite of backing off. In fact, like at one point I thought he was going to shove Ollie Watkins into the north bank at some stage. Like, so far was he pushing him away from the goal. He was going to send him out to Holloway Road for a cab. I thought, yes, this is better. But what I loved in this game that I don't think I've really seen yet is the driving out as well, because it's one thing to be able to pass the ball, but driving out like that's such an underrated skill for a centre half. And about 18 months ago, I did an interview with Leah Williamson from the women's team, who I know pretty well. And she's like very renowned for her passing out from the back. But one of the things she said she'd really worked on was like being able to dribble out, because once people get wise to the fact that you can pass, they block you. And she was kind of saying, actually, defenders do get quite a bit of space to really drive out, because it's the thing that they're not prepared for. They're prepared to press you and hurry you in possession. They're prepared to block your passing lane. But when you kind of zip past them, they're thinking, ah, hang on, we hadn't really prepared for that. Like, pressing doesn't stop that. That then I actually have to like put a tackle in or foul you or something. And it really commits defenders. And it reminds me a lot of, people might remember in the 2004-05 season, we played away at Portsmouth and Sol Campbell scored the winner when he just larruped one in from 30 yards. And he was asked about it after the game. And he kind of said, well, we spoke at halftime and Portsmouth were sat so deep that Arsene told the centre backs, like, come out, because, you know, you're the only guys that have got space here. And I think that can happen with centre-backs. And if you've got a centre-back that can drive out, we saw Kolo Touré do it a lot as well in that same kind of period. I think it's such a big weapon, and it's something that's really, really underutilised. Mm. And I thought he really surprised, even Leeds, who know him really, really well, I thought it really kind of caught them off guard a little bit, because the game is so structured nowadays. I think dribbling is a massive, massive skill to kind of unhinge and unstructure a game. And if your centre backs are doing it, that's great. So I'd love to see more of that from Benjamin White. And maybe his rebrand has helped as well. Maybe that's behind this little miniature uptick that I think I've observed.
Yeah, I mean, maybe Ben White is just not a very good player, but Benjamin White is super elite, as we like to say. So, I mean, that certainly holds. I don't see any reason why that wouldn't be the case.
If he can go to Benny Blanco, then I think then we've got like a Van Dijk level defender there.
There's no question that just evolving his name into something more dynamic is going to totally change what we get from the player. And this is the level of analysis, by the way, that you come here for. The interesting thing is, this is a little reductive because it's such a small sample size, but you could also point to the fact that Arsenal against Palace, against Brighton, you know, in some of these games, sitting a little deeper, letting our lines get compressed, And so then the room isn't available in front of a central defender to stride out, right? Because he's basically striding into all the pressure that's being heaped on you. But against Villa, where we pushed out more, against Leeds, where we sort of let the accordion stay expanded, so to speak, there's that space in front of you. And then those midfielders are pinning the attackers back a little. So now he's got room to stride into. So we've created space for him to go exploit. I'm happy for him because, you know, we did go play for Leeds and that was a club that wanted him. And, I, you know, I think it was a nice opportunity for him to really shine against a club he had played for. Paul, I don't want to shut you out of the Benny Blanco conversation, Benjamin White conversation, certainly not Ben White conversation. That's not who he is anymore. But I do think also that, you know, one thing that I had hypothesized about and talked about a little bit and been pretty much rudely shut down by everybody who either interacts with me on social media or on this podcast about the idea of Tomiyasu potentially being our third best center back in addition to our starting right back. And, you know, what would happen in the event that one of our starting center backs is absent? And I think a lot of that is due to the scars, the wounds of seeing Holding and Pablo Mari at the beginning of the season and not feeling very confident in that. So I think it's great that Holding comes in with Benjamin White and puts in a really solid performance and looks really assured, and that partnership looks like it works, because it is just nice to sort of get a reminder that we aren't one, or look, I don't want to overstate this, but we aren't one center back injury from potentially being, you know, into a possibly really bad situation. So seeing Holding have a partnership with Benjamin White in this game that looked pretty competent and comfortable, I thought was a really nice sign of depth at a position where maybe there were some question marks. So do you agree that not just Benjamin White having a good game, but Holding impressing was nice to see as their partnership develops?
Well, I haven't had the same concerns over Holding that maybe are out there. I mean, he played 2,500 minutes for us in the Premier League last year, which puts him basically number one. I think he's number two in terms of minutes in the Premier League last year by just a few minutes. Xhaka and Saka are up there, but they're all basically on the same minutes. He played so much last year, and I think he was fairly consistent. And it's a little bit, look, it depends on who his partner was. And I think with Gabriel coming into his own and being able to provide additional cover, it leaves the suspect man in the equation. If you're playing Cluedo as Pablo Mari is the guy who's given every other center back trouble, and even he looked better last year, so maybe he'll get a little better when we see him again eventually sometime.
Can I quickly reveal something funny that happened to me on the Instant Reaction Pod?
Yes.
That you were there for?
Yes. I think I put the killer blow in.
I was struggling for a take because it's the Instant Reaction Pod and we needed a stock falling, and we only came up with two. So it fell to me to come up with a take, and I kind of like threw Pablo Mari out there, and then I was feeling my oats. So I was like, oh, I'm going to really go now with this take. And I was like, yeah, Pablo Mari, you know, because Tomiyasu could play center back and Holding. And you know what? I wonder if Pablo Mari will play another minute for us this season. And then literally as I'm like formulating this idea and I'm putting it out there and I'm getting increasingly pleased with myself about it, news breaks potentially from a fellow podcaster that actually Pablo Mari was slated to start this very game but had a stomach bug. So it did throw a bit of a wrench in the take I was building, but I was glad to be set straight. So I just thought I'd take that embarrassment and share it widely.
Yeah, look, I think even Pablo Mari is going to look better with a better center back beside him. And the state we were in at the start of this season. So I think Holding will be fine and will play a role this year. The one problem he's got is Ben White. I'm sticking with Ben White, by the way. He can rebrand if he likes, just like Dan Burns. I'm not switching just because you pointed out there's no S on the end. It's not my fault.
That's Paul, the guy who refuses to call people by the name they would like to be called. Let's just be clear about that. That's a Paul thing. That is not a this podcast thing.
Yeah, I was a bit like that with Bellerin. I mean, you all went with your Bellerins, and I'm like, oh, fuck off. It's too late. You know, once I've invested myself in the name, that's their name. Right, so where was I? Yeah, Ben White never gets injured, so there's a jinx, but he never gets injured, so... He can play all day long, every day. He played in the championship. What do they play? 46 games.
100. Oh, no.
Yeah, yeah. Not only did he have 46 starts, he played every minute for 40. That was his first ever season at kind of a top level club in a top level league, the Championship. And then he came to Brighton and he missed like a game or two because he got a red card. And I can talk you through why he got that red card. It was the right red card to take. It was a double yellow, saved his team from conceding a goal, but he had to hack somebody down, so he lost a game or so. And basically, he plays every minute of every game that any manager ever wants him to play. So there he is, jinxed for you. So that's Holding's real problem. But he played on the left in this, so that's kind of interesting. So if anything happens with Gabriel, and we hope he's robust and fit and settled in and can last the whole season, that might be Holding's next best bet, because it won't be Ben White. The other thing is, having watched a lot of Ben White at Leeds, I think I watched 13 or 14 games of him doing his thing. I'm just very used to him, very settled with him. He's going to continue to do things that upset you guys, because you think centre-backs are all about defending and should be good at it. And he's
Which is weird considering how much disdain I have for playing defensive football, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it is. But he will continue to do a thing every now and then where I will say something like, sometimes he doesn't look like a centre-back. He looks like a midfielder playing centre-back. But football's just so much better when he's playing it. And I know you guys are really into this striding out thing. He does that on average once a game, based on what I've seen before. So that's not enough for me. What's enough for me, though, is his passing, his chill on the ball, how we'll play with him at the back, the fact that he allows us, or he gives the manager enough courage to push our team up the field with him, and what's his face, Gabriel, we'll play a high line, more aggressive. We'll just play better football with Ben White on the pitch. I'm surprised you guys haven't warmed to his passing until the last game or so. Like, I can't tell you which games. There was one who did we just play? Aston Villa. He had a left-footed chip from midfield. You'll also find, distribution-wise, he's going to be the guy, when you get out the pass maps, he'll be the centre-back who's standing in the middle of the pitch. From pass maps, it might look like that during the game, but actually he takes the central position for distribution, and Gabriel will be pushed over to the left a bit. And he's had a few really eye-catching passes, and he'll have one or two of those a game, I think, based on what I've seen before. So yeah. I'm just very settled into who he is. I really like what he's going to do for us. He'll have his moments.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing is, the data analysis of him coming in was that he was elite with the ball at his feet, carrying it forward. The passing data was a lot more suspect. Not bad, just not...
I remember that, yeah.
Not sort of the elite ball progressor that is sort of played up that he is. And I think one of the reasons the eye test and the data tell different stories is, to your point, Ben White will play one or two really eye-catching big, long switches or balls over the top in a game. But it's all the other passes that are, you know, pretty run-of-the-mill, pretty meat and drink. And that's okay. I mean, your center back doesn't have to be pinging line breakers 20 yards, you know, in his own 14 every time they touch the ball. I am admittedly impressed by him recently. I think, like Tim, there have been uneven moments. What's funny is he's had some games, I'll probably get it wrong, maybe it was Burnley, or maybe it was even Brighton, where he was really, really good. What was the one where he had the mare on the ball? He had it taken from him, but... he was really good defensively.
Brighton, had a tough game because they cut off his passing lanes and stuff.
Yeah, I don't think that's the one I'm thinking of, though. Tim, do you remember there was one where he had a couple of
bad... That might have been Burnley, yeah.
Yeah, deep sort of in the right half space, he got trapped there.
Burnley, no, it was Burnley. Burnley really marked him tightly, but what they kind of did was left Partey free because they didn't realise we were going to play Partey deeper. But what happened was, in the second half, when Burnley, you know, as you'd expect, came with the aerial bombardment, he stood up to it really well.
Yeah, and that's the point, right? Like, he's had weird games in the sense that, like, that game, he was really physically dominant in the box. And then he's had games like Villa where, on the ball, he's been a big contributor. I think we can all agree the direction of travel with him is up, as is the group generally. And I feel really good about where he's going and what he's done recently. So whether, you know, your mileage may vary on some of the earlier performances, like them, dislike them, whatever the case may be, I think there's consensus about the direction of travel. And I think we can push the Eddie and Kedia conversation back a little, because 18 minutes in, there's really no getting around the fact that a lot of the noise after this game was related to Pepe and Martinelli. I think it is sort of unfortunate grouping them, because, Tim, Nicola Pepe is an extravagantly acquired potential star who came with big hype, is now in the heart of his prime, and needs to be delivering his best possible football right now. That's where he is in his career. The other is almost a punt on a young player who immediately showed really elite potential, missed a year with what can be a very, very bad injury, actually, and hasn't had much opportunity since coming back, and is only now trying to get back to that at an age which, by the way, is still younger than Emile Smith Rowe. So sort of comparing the two, I think, is a little uncomfortable, because they're such different situations career-wise, but let's try to work through them. I'll let you talk Martinelli first. It's always dangerous to over-index some of the stuff you read on social media or in chat rooms. Like, I was in the Discord, and there's a lot of Martinelli slander, and, you know, remember when you thought he was elite? Ha ha, you know, this guy can't trap a ball. And, like, I will accept that he has had a poor start to the season and had a poor game here. I just can't get there yet with the drawing conclusions on a player of his age that's flashed his potential. So what's your take, to be fair, on the performance, but also on where we're going with this player?
Yeah, sure. It was a 6 out of 10 performance. And to be honest, for all of the players coming into a team like this, when A, you're not playing, and B, you then come into a team that doesn't really ever play together. I mean, have the, like, Nketiah, Martinelli, Pepe, is that a front three that's ever played together before? I'm not sure it is. Maybe it has, but...
Yeah, and then, oh, by the way, you put players like Elneny and Kolasinac around them. Yeah,
exactly. And like a midfield pairing of Elneny and Maitland-Niles behind them, and Kolasinac behind them. You know, it's not quite as good, and it's not as fluid, and they're not together, and they've all, like, not really played very often. So it's really difficult for players to impress in that environment. You look at Tavares impressed against Villa because he came into the first team. And that's much easier. I think that's a much easier environment. I wasn't expecting any of those players to really impress. And I think they were all, you know, Elneny, Kolasinac, Martinelli, Nketiah even. I think they were all pretty 6 out of 10. And it was really just, it was more a kind of fitness exercise and keeping them ticking over. It was interesting you referenced Martinelli's age in comparison with Smith Rowe. Because if I were Martinelli, I would really be looking at Smith Rowe as an inspiration, because, again, people keep forgetting that Smith Rowe came through like 3 years ago now, and he was playing those Europa League games, and he was scoring in the Europa League group stage, and he was doing really well. And then we sent him on loan to Leipzig, and then he was injured for about a year, basically. And probably even more, because when he went on loan to Huddersfield, he was, you know, still feeling his way back in fitness-wise. And that was a really useful loan. Not so much, actually, I think, for the first-team experience, although I do think that was probably valuable. I think more just fitness, just blowing away some of those cobwebs for him. So that's a really, like, because Martinelli could have a very similar trajectory of someone who burst onto the scene at 18, gets an injury, goes away for a year, and then kind of comes back and goes again. I think the truth is with Martinelli, I think it's right to group him with Pepe, actually. And I think it will be interesting to see if a decision is made about who to give minutes to between Martinelli and Pepe, whether you get to a stage where you go, do you know what? This is the player Pepe is always going to be. Maybe we give those minutes to Martinelli because we think he can be something else. With Pepe, I think I said a few weeks ago on the pod, I just don't see any other conclusion to his Arsenal career than seeing out his contract. And just being this player for the next 2 years. And it was interesting.
You don't think there's like a 30 or 35 million pound bid for him somewhere that we sort of reluctantly shake our head and just take? No?
No. I don't see that. I'd be quite happy, because I'd be quite happy to just... I think there's a lot of talent in Pepe, but I've given up on the idea that he'll be anything other than like quite a skittish player. But with Martinelli, I listened to the Instant Reaction pod, and it's interesting because you guys gave him a stock down, which is exactly what I'd have done had I been on the pod. But then when I listened to it, I thought, well, actually, what he's getting a stock down because he's got a stock neutral. where he hasn't really done anything wrong. He's done nothing wrong in this performance. He's maybe a little bit listless in 6 out of 10.
A little slow to deliver, like when he cuts inside. Yeah, he's got some options. It wasn't bad, I agree. Just not.
Yeah, some opportunities. Yeah. But like the reason it was a stock down for him is because it wasn't a stock up. And that's the situation he's in at the moment, where minutes are at such a premium for him. Every time he plays, he has to do something amazing. And that's quite a difficult decision to be position to be in, and you can see it in his game as well. Like Clive said on the Instant Reaction Pod, he's trying too hard to impress. But what else is he supposed to do, really? Because if he just goes out and plays 7 out of 10 and doesn't really try to do anything, he knows he's not going to get in the team. So it's a difficult bind for him to be in. I think what I've always thought, that the reality for Martinelli's Arsenal career is he's going to have to wait out a couple of those guys, because if not entirely in style, in intent, he's just so similar to Aubameyang and Pepe in terms of being like quite an end product-y player and not a build-up player. And you can't really, particularly in an Arteta team, I'm not sure you can really have more than one player if you're going to play a front three like that. The glimmer of light for, the two glimmers of light for him are obviously January, when a couple of those players go away, and that gives him a chance. But the real glimmer of light for him should be the Aston Villa game, actually. And I know we said it on the post Villa pod. Well, you guys said it, sorry, on the post Villa pod. If we play that kind of, like, you know, guess 4-4-2 type kind of system again, where we're concentrating on high pressing, I can absolutely see him as either one of the players in that front two. I could see him doing the Lacazette role or the Aubameyang role, and that's where he might think, okay, if there's a role for a second striker here, that's probably quite a good role for me right now. But really, his primary target should be, I need to take Pepe's minutes. That's what I need to do right now. I need to get ahead of Pepe, and then maybe worry about the rest of it later.
Yeah, and it did also look in this game like things were just kind of going up the right-hand side a little more. I think Emil Smith Rowe maybe drifted to the right a bit more and did a little bit more work on Pepe's side. I mean, to be fair to Pepe, he did get an assist in this game. I don't think heading the ball across the box is anything that we need to, like, you know, watch on replay on a YouTube highlight reel in 4K or anything, but, like, he did do it. He took 3 shots. He had 2 key passes. So, and, you know, and passed at 88.9%. The frustration with Pepe is different from Martinelli for me, in that I thought Pepe's game was sort of punctuated by exciting moves up that right-hand side that ended with him doing that thing he does where he's way too predictable cutting inside on his left foot, way too slow to distribute when the chance is there, and then the opportunity goes begging. But often it was an opportunity created by his own sort of cleverness or brilliance, whereas Martinelli felt a little peripheral to me, and also had some moments where maybe he just missed the chance to make the right pass. And to your point, Tim, I think that's absolutely right. Asking a guy who's played very, very little all season, who's very young, filled with potential, but, you know, maybe raw, to come in and play around a lot of other players who are rusty, haven't played much. You know, Maitland-Niles I thought was good, but he's not really a creative ball progressor who's going to put Martinelli through. He's got Kolasinac on his side. It's just a different kind of group to come into. So it may sound like being an apologist for him. And if that's what it is, I'm sort of willing to eat that label, Paul, because the guy has a 10-goal, 4-assist in all comp season at 18 years old at Arsenal. That's not an accident. We've seen him score sensational goals. We've seen him not just flash some skill, but provide genuine high-value end product at an elite level at a very young age. And then miss a year. I mean, it really is difficult. You know, we had players that we thought were sure thing. Jack Wilshere comes to mind, and we've seen what persistent injury could do at a young age to destroy a career. Now, hopefully we're not talking that with Martinelli, who, by the way, also looks a bit taller, which I thought was interesting. He looks like he's really filled out. He's growing. But so I'm sort of comfortable being more patient with him. Whereas with Pepe, I do understand the frustration a bit more, because in the heart of your prime, as one of the really high-paid, big-name players in the squad that's expected to deliver and should really be pushing guys like Bukayo Saka and Emil Smith Rowe, who are 20 and 21, for their place, because you're right in your prime and you're a very talented player, seeing him effortlessly beat a guy at the halfway line only to blow the chance tripping over his feet or persistently cutting onto his left into traffic, you know, at the end of the move, it is really frustrating. And so do you think it is a little more fair with Pepe, who I get why people will continue to be patient with him, because there is that end product, there is that shot taking, there is that trickery, but the inability to consistently turn dangerous positions into something more feels like something that, for a player in his prime, you have the right to expect a little better than that.
Well, the other thing there is when people are making excuses for him is his goals, and a season ago, maybe not last season so much, his assists. But he could get back to doing assists again. He's a frustrating player. There's kind of nothing he can't do, skills-wise, ability-wise. He just doesn't seem to have the mind where he's mapped into the game plan and the decision-making. And it's a shame, really. I think we're seeing the player he will be. I always remember Arteta's comments about after he'd taken him out for a while last season in kind of the second half of the season, something to the effect of, and we knew he was working with him, and that's why kind of why we hadn't seen him much, or that was what we were suspected. And then he was back and he was playing well, and he was interviewed on it and asked something about, you know, had he been working with Pepe, and kind of has he done a Sané on him? Has he done a Arteta working with Sterling? But Arteta's comment was much more, I've done what I can with him. he says, it's up to him now, which was not the glowing. He basically said, yes, I've worked with him, but the question implied if he was going to keep working with him, and the answer implied not really. That's it. This is I've done my work with him. It's now up to him to do his thing. It's like at a certain point, there's only so much coaching the guy can get. After that, it's whether he can translate it in game on the pitch. And so I just get this feeling this is who he is. I mean, he's, what, 26 going on, 27, as Tim pointed out, or as you pointed out, he's got 2 years left. I think there'll be times in the season where we appreciate him more than other times, and those will be the times nobody else is scoring. And we'll want to find a way to get him in there. I've never been a fan of, oh, we could make him a striker or a second striker. But you know, it's probably worth the shot at some stage if we're going to start getting our money's worth out of him in the end. I still like him from the left. And so, you know, if Smith Rowe needs a bit of a rest, or we play him a little more centrally or whatever, I certainly don't object to seeing Pepe from the left. I think we've all grown to love Saka from the right. So that, you know, the great thing is we now have a situation where Saka and Smith Rowe seem to start all the time, not just because they're good and they're fit, which is two great parts of it, but because Arteta sees them no longer as projects, but actually they're here, they're now, they're there to deliver, and they're performing in pretty much every game, to the point where even Smith Rowe ended up playing this game instead of Odegaard, because Odegaard was had a niggle. So why not play Smith Rowe? So I guess he's nowhere near his red line in terms of fitness. So The upside is those guys can and will and do play most, if not all the time, which, you know, go back a year ago, we would have loved that was the reason for the, if they were playing for the right reasons, and they are. Pepe, I mean, if he could adapt to playing on the left-hand side and really make that his own, wouldn't help Martinelli for a little while, but that would be his avenue to getting regular starts, or work out how to play on the right with Tomiyasu and Odegaard when he comes back in as the 10, and start being cleverer about his triangles, because he's just so bloody predictable, you know which way he's going to go. So if you're a defender and you're smart, you don't give him that extra yard and he won't get past you.
Clive said it on the instant reaction. I think we're all thinking it, which is just, you're not Iron Robin. Like, you have to go to the byline at some point. You have to vary this up. The other thing is just give the ball quicker. It's not always going to come off, but, you know, he gets into positions where he's got his man beat, but he lets the defense recover. And it is tough, right? Because you're criticizing a guy who created a dangerous opportunity by roasting someone on the halfway line. And carrying it all the way into the box, somewhat sensationally, but he's then the guy who ruins it, you know? So he's getting dinged for blowing a chance to be dangerous that he created through his own quality. I do find that when you have players, Tim, where you start saying things like, oh, it's actually, he needs to be on the left, or, well, what if he's a second striker, or really if he has this partner, like once you're getting into that territory,
yep,
it's usually just the player,
yep,
because you find yourself not saying that so much about the guys that really make it. Look, there is nothing, absolutely nothing in football lazier than just comparing one player to another from a prior era. So I want to do that now with Pepe. Yeah. This is a really awkward fit, but I'm reminded a bit of Andre Arshavin.
Yeah.
At the time, also our star signing, right? Our record signing, mm-hmm, as Pepe became. A guy who...
16 million.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, what's an extra... Oh, God, do the math in your head, Elliot.
56 million.
56 million between friends. But, you know, comes in, has these moments, like scores, what, 4 goals against Liverpool, right? I mean, games where he just looks like he could be just unstoppable, scores that famous goal against Barcelona, obviously. Arshavin! And maybe his highs were higher than Pepe's have been, to be fair. But, like, I think it's the point that a player that on his day was so good, it made you want to think he was always good, but the problem is he wasn't on his day enough. And when he wasn't, the mistakes and the sloppiness were bad. Now, the difference with Arshavin, he probably didn't have the work ethic or the commitment to being a high-level professional, if I'm being fair.
Yeah,
and I don't think that that is remotely the case with Pepe. I don't get that sense at all from him,
no,
who looks like he's working his ass off and obviously is in peak condition. But I can use that comparison as a launch point for you to say what you have to say about Pepe. But do you think there's something fair about that? Because he was another player, Arshavin. I mean, there were some fans, I know Tim Clark, friend of mine, adored Arshavin because of those moments of mercurial brilliance. But that wasn't really the whole picture of who he was.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a really fair comparison. Really what it comes down to is intensity. And with both of them, you can tell when it's there and you can tell when it's not. Essentially, like, you watch Pepe's performance in the cup final in 2020, you know, possibly, well, given the magnitude of the game, almost certainly his best game for the club. And he looked engaged. He looked like a man possessed. You could see it. And then sometimes he just doesn't. And sometimes he still does that thing where the ball comes to him and he looks like, I don't know, like he looks like he's about to fall asleep before he's got it under control. And you think, oh God, here we go. I mean, I think all the stuff about him needing to vary things, him needing to run in behind every now and then and pick up those positions. Because the thing is, I'm not really interested in Pepe having the ball anywhere other than the 18-yard area.
Yeah.
But the problem, that's when he comes alive a little bit as well. That's when he really engages and you get that intensity when he's trying to get a shot off. Technically, there is no reason why, like, he's not Theo Walcott, right? There is no reason why, like, he can control the ball and he can pass it. He's technically really good and he can, like you said, roast players. The problem is some of the positions he puts himself in and his body position and things like that, he pretty much always has to do something amazing to make something happen. And he's good enough to do it often enough. But sometimes, like, if his body position was just a little bit more kind of looking forward or looking a bit more engaged, he wouldn't have to do like a big 10 out of 10 twist or turn or nutmeg or something incredible. Like,
I feel like Saka is the perfect comparison there, by the way, because
exactly,
his balance and his body position and his, like, he can do little small movements and just totally throw a defender the wrong way.
Exactly. And it's not quite as breathtaking, get you out of your seat, but it works more often. Like, he'll do something that doesn't necessarily take your breath away, but he's away and that's it. And he's at the edge of the area. And then, you know, he's in a position to make something happen. Whereas it feels like Pepe has to do something incredible to get there, and he can do it. But, like, if he could just focus on You know, maybe taking up better positions, taking up more aggressive positions, just taking the ball with a little bit more intent. I know as well that actually his, I guess you'd call it languidness, is sometimes his great strength and sometimes why he's able to burn like those fullbacks, because he just picks up that sudden bit of acceleration, or he lulls you into a false sense of security, and then bang, he's like, he's got his toe around the ball, he's swiveling and he's past you. But the problem is he then like kind of has to go back and try and beat the player twice more. Like, he rarely just races away from a player, you know, once he's beaten them, like he wants to, because he needs to cut back on his left foot again, which means he has to beat them again. And, you know, you look at, you know, players like Pires, Bergkamp, like obviously we're talking the absolute creme de la creme of Arsenal kind of creative attacking players. They don't do that stuff. Like, they're just simple. They're, like, everything's just simple. And with Pep, that, I guess to put a coda on this long ramble, that's the issue, right? Pepe needs to learn how to play more simply, because he's got the talent to do the rest. He needs to put himself in a position where simplicity can rule, rather than, you know, having to do something incredible every time he gets the ball.
Yeah, and I really think because of the way he uses his body, like, he must be so tired at the end of a game, because, you know, the leaning and the fainting and the wriggling and the show you this way and go that way, and like, it's great, but he doesn't have that compactness to his game.
He'd be much more deadly if instead of trying to skill his way to a goal, he'd 1-2 his way with a few triangles up in that corner, open up a yard into the box, and then roast the last defender, not the last two or three defenders, which is what he tries to do. He tries to do it solo instead of using those two guys around him for a wall pass, a 1-2, in behind, pick up the ball and, like, get in behind them.
That's exactly it. Like, Iron Robin isn't like beating players on the half, or wasn't beating players on the halfway line or halfway into that, like, he was on the edge, like, he was 25 yards out facing up a defender, and then you only have to beat one to get your shot off. And he, you know, Pepe, obviously he does do that because that's where most of his goals come from, but I'd just like to see him try and do it a bit more often.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, like, it would probably be less of a existential crisis for the fan base trying to figure out what the deal is with Pepe if A, the price tag was lower. I think we've covered that. But also B, we were more of a free scoring team. Right, like, Pepe is in his prime, and the guys ahead of him are players like Emil Smith Rowe and Bukayo Saka, who are excellent young players, but they're not banging in the goals. Those are not 15 goal guys. They're not 12 goal guys. They're not even 10 goal guys. And here's this guy who was 72 million pounds and is in his prime. And, like, I think the existential crisis comes from, we're not a free scoring team, and we could really use that contribution. Like, if Saka and Smith Rowe were each on 4 or 5 goals already, and Aubameyang had 12, you know, he's not going to have 12. We've only played whatever the hell it is, 8 games or something. But, like, you get my point. It's that we kind of need another big goal scorer in the team.
Yeah, and he's so definitely a 12, 15 goal a season guy, easy, if he gets the minutes. Here's my hope for him. Apart from seeing as you guys have shot down my idea of playing him in other positions, because that's
no, ridiculous. I like it. I just think once you start going down that path, it's usually because the player himself has sort of failed to show you what he is. Yeah.
Here's another suggestion from desperation. Odegaard starts slapping him around on the pitch, tells him where to go, tells him when to move, points at him. And we've seen Odegaard do this with players in general and with Pepe specifically, where he'll run with the ball and he'll point ahead to tell the guy where to make the move so that the other guy can overlap or underlap, because that's basically what Pepe needs. He needs to get into patterns of play like you see at Liverpool, those basic but absolutely lethal triangles. They work on either side. If you make the right move and the other guy makes that right move, you have the defense, and it's not, you don't have to be a genius with the ball. You just have to make the right triangles, make the right moves, and then get a guy with quality on the ball. And I'm hoping Odegaard gets on the pitch in that spot over to the right and starts pointing at Pepe when and how to move, and that he responds.
Yeah, it's funny because there are a lot of ways you can disappoint in a game. Like, one way is to just be super peripheral. Like, when Aubameyang disappoints, it's usually that you just forget he's out there, basically. When Pepe disappoints, it's almost always because he's had a lot of opportunities to be more dangerous and doesn't take them. And so I have to give him credit for the fact that, like, he finds ways to get involved, get into dangerous positions, get on the ball. But, like, at some point, like we've said, you're in your prime. You have to deliver.
One other thing in his favor, he works his ass off defensively in a way he didn't at the start. Like, his work rate is there. And he's given that, which makes me think that he at least wants to make the changes. So that's why I hope he may respond to Odegaard.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we are proud members of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. And if you saw it, I posted a picture a few days back of the Blue Wire Podcast Studio in the Wynn in Las Vegas, where we would have been had our event not been canceled there. But we will be there again, because just looking at that picture makes me have that I want to go there reaction. You guys saw that picture, right? Mm-hmm. That's it. I want to go there. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, as if Vegas doesn't have enough to get you there. But yeah,
that studios was, don't normally get me fired up, but that was delish.
Yeah, it was. So we're not the only ones making quality content. You could debate whether we are making quality content, but other people are. And I want to tell you about a podcast coming from the Blue Wire Network. So in 1995, I was old enough to remember it. I was, 5 years old then, I think? He laughs internally and then cries. Cal Ripken Jr., baseball player, broke Lou Gehrig's record of 2,130 consecutive games played. I mean, that's a lot of games. It's a long time. And I don't know why it captured and captivated the nation the way it did, and probably beyond the nation, to be fair. But it was such a big story. Something about the work ethic and the just availability and commitment. I mean, Granit Xhaka, by the way, would have smashed that in baseball if he played then. But ironically, I said at a time when he's out with injury. He was the cover of the milk carton, and it was just a huge, huge story. And like leading up to the moment where he broke the record, like became a national news story. But there are some salacious rumors behind how he got there. Rumors involving Kevin Costner. I won't go further. Rumors involving a power outage at Oriole Park at Camden Yards. A lot of really interesting rumors that apparently there's a little more truth to them than you might have believed. And Mac Montedon and Sam Dingman, they explored that. They dove into it. They dove into what was behind some of these rumors and what helped keep the streak alive. And the new Blue Wire podcast, The Rumor, these friends, lifelong Oriole fans and seekers of truth, Mac Montedon and Sam Dingman, attempt to unravel the 24-year-old story before it unravels them, it says here. Because if their investigation reveals that it's truly true, the rumor would change the way we think about baseball, fair, reality, bold, and the very nature of how myths are made and destroyed, big if true. So no biggie. Listen to The Rumor on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get your finer podcasts and even your terrible podcasts as well. So, Tim, you know, if I was the coach of a football team, football club, well, first of all, be relegated into whatever the lowest division of football is. But this is the kind of game where I think my team talk would just be time to shine. Time to shine. Time to show me that you belong in my plans, because, and they probably would hate that, but like it was time to shine for these players, because there's no Europa League. There's very little sort of throwaway football. Not that this is throwaway, but you know, we may get a very big, scary opponent in the quarterfinal of the League Cup. We might take that pretty seriously. The FA Cup, it depends how the draw goes. In the league, there's, you know, there's no weak teams in the league anymore. You got to go for it every weekend. So this was the time to shine. And if Martinelli and Pepe didn't necessarily do it, maybe Rob Holding did a bit. Callum Chambers scoring a goal doesn't hurt. I think the player you'd have to say that shined was Eddie Nketiah. Scored a golazo. That was nearly the miss of the century. I have a very sort of, I would say, heterodox view on Eddie Nketiah's performance that I'll share with you in a moment. But in general, I'm curious if you think he's the one player who maybe will put himself in the mind. It's tough, right? Because with Aubameyang and Lacazette being in great form now and coming in and making a difference, who knows what the opportunities are. But I really thought he played the position in a different way and added something that could be useful. So is he the one who grasped this opportunity a bit?
I still think he was quite 6 out of 10, if I'm honest.
You're stealing my take. Okay, go for it. tell me why.
I think if you, like, before the goal, I was kind of looking and going, this, you know, this is like, I like the guy, I like the player, but, and maybe I was taking, taking my kind of baggage into this, but I was just like, you're just not quite there. Like, you're good. You're not a bad player by any means, but like, you're not quite the level that we need. And that's actually been apparent for a couple of years now, and this should have ended a couple of years ago. I mean, I realize that take as well has a lot of my baggage in it, but like, particularly during the first half, I was kind of looking at it going, yeah, the ball's just not sticking. There just isn't that presence up front. Because the thing is, I mean, he's quite similar to Aubameyang in terms of, you know, like, he's improved aspects of his kind of forward play, his all-round play and everything, but he's still not really there. But he's not enough of a goal threat. Like, if Aubameyang didn't score at the rate he did, he'd be a bad player to have in your team.
Yeah.
You know, because
a 10 goal a season Aubameyang is not a player you want.
Exactly. Like, the Aubameyang we got last season, not really the Aubameyang that you want. It's you know, you can get away with being like, you know, the penalty box striker.
Cavani, right? There are certain players that the only thing they're adding is goals, and so they have to add a lot of them to bring you value.
Exactly. Even like, you know, Ronaldo at Manchester United, like, even that's a question. Like, he will undoubtedly get more than 20 goals for United this season, but there's still the he giveth and taketh away kind of question. And you know, I just thought that this was quite 6 out of 10 from Eddie, which is not to say it was bad or anything, but before the goal, I was kind of looking at it and thinking, the all-round play is just not there. The threat probably isn't quite there. I mean, I don't want to, like, obviously not like criticizing him for the goal, because it's really, really good that he chased that down. And he got, I don't know if you remember, he got a very similar goal in the Premier League against Southampton just after lockdown. One of those games that it was about 1,000 degrees because it was in June away at Southampton, and he went and closed the goalkeeper down, and kind of like, he does get a lot of goals like that. He gets a lot of goals like by kind of chasing lost causes, which is a good thing. But at the same time, like, I almost feel like that's how he has to score in this team. You know, like, I don't see him quite as often like on the end of a flowing move or anything like that. Mm. I mean, I guess he had like a good goal against Everton, in fairness, last season, where he kind of put a cross in quite early. But yeah, I guess I just don't see that enough. That's the thing. Like, he has quality in the penalty area. He really does. But I just don't quite see enough of it. And I have to say, in this game, I didn't come away with a different impression of Eddie Nketiah. I came away with the impression, this is a guy who can make a career in the Premier League, probably in the lower reaches of the Premier League, but he's just not quite what we need. And I understand why we played him. And actually, playing him revealed our hand for Leicester, I think, because that tells you that Aubameyang and Lacazette are both going to play. And it's just a case of whether it's in the same formation as Villa or whether it's in the 4-3-3. But yeah, I essentially my impression of Eddie Nketiah didn't really change, and I still think it's a bit of a scandal that we're going to lose him for free and that we didn't get money for him.
Yeah, I mean, do we get tribunal money from him if we lose?
Yeah,
him?
But yeah, like the pittance.
The pittance. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's funny because I was expecting you and Paul to be, you know, pretty positive, and then I could agree but walk it back a little. But then you went probably more skeptical than even I was. So now I'm in the weird position of needing to like go a little more positive on it, because I actually thought he was good. I mean, I think there are qualities
in good.
Paul, I'm going to let you get to that. Absolutely. Yeah. I was about to, sorry, I didn't respond to your little chat here. I want to get your take on it too. I just think, well, I'll let you go and then I'll maybe find the middle ground. Cause yeah, I think he definitely did some things that are good. And oh, by the way, the slip and the near miss takes some of the gloss off the way the ball gets in the net. But the awareness, the hustle, and that sensational touch over the keeper for his goal should not be undervalued. That is elite forward play. So fire away, Paul.
He's got 3 touches on that goal. 2 of them are excellent. He doesn't just stick a foot out. I mean, all right, there's some luck there, but like, you don't get that ball going up there and coming down right where you want it without it being a large measure of skill. And I agree with Tim. He's had a bit of a pattern of chasing down almost lost causes and getting lucky with them. this was one where he knew where that, like, once he started to chase it, he knew what he was doing with his touch. His second touch knocked it perfectly to the point where he was like, oh, I got this. And he was like, he was about to be real cool and get his phone out. I think the only, like, people are thinking the third touch was a measure of his skill. He's like, he's a really good, tidy little finisher. He just got way too cocky about what he was about to do next in his celebration. He had too much time to think about it. I think that was one for his agent and for his future contract. And it was funny because Scott said something to the effect on Twitter that he's lucky, or he was, what was it? You said he was, he took the wrong touch to get it completely wrong. And in fact, he took the right touch to get it completely wrong.
Oh, yeah. Any of the other touches, you don't get that chance. Yeah.
Yeah. He had the wide open goal, and even though he fluffed, it went in, which was good.
I still don't know how it went in, by the way. Like, I've watched it like 20 times, and I'm still like,
there's a lot of goal. Like, he almost has to hit it backwards, and he almost did to miss. So he gets his goal. Look, I'm not saying he was great in this game, but I thought he was pretty good. Here's what I more wanted to talk about. We give him a hard time because he kind of didn't prove himself at Arsenal, but he was good for a little while. He was asked to play a totally different role to what he's developed for or designed for, which is the fox in the box, the kind of finishing things off. We had him basically doing that Lacazette dropping deep role, and then Lacazette started, hit a run of form last year and took the position back, and Eddie didn't get in the team when we started playing the kind of football that gets us into the final third and gives you chances. So he had a rough season last year, even though we kept him around and we didn't use him in the second half of the season. Again, another player I've watched a lot of outside of Arsenal, even when he was at Leeds. I thought he was pretty good at Leeds, but and people laughed that Bamford was keeping it out of the team. Well, who's laughing now? I don't know. But Bamford turned out to be actually very... We now at least get why Bielsa likes Bamford and why he's his kind of striker. And even still, Eddie almost got him out of the team just before his move. So I like him a lot. I don't know that he's Arsenal level, but I like him a lot. I thought he was good in this game. I think he's going to have a very good career somewhere. I wish we were getting money for him. He's a clever, skillful player who can now do a bit of everything, a bit of hold up for a small player, a bit of connect the dots. He works hard. He chases. He presses. He should have gone to Crystal Palace, but they probably didn't offer the wages he was looking for, and he now thinks he's bigger than that.
There's so many things that make you shake your head with this, because, like, on the one hand, I think Eddie Nketiah is a good player. He should be playing for someone that could use him. I've always thought Brighton might have been that place, but like, my goodness, it's such a bad situation for us to have this guy who didn't quite make it, who now is probably going to leave on a free, who is getting minutes that we then cannot give to the other young striker we just re-signed and is basically stuck in the reserves in Balogun, right? Like, it's a weird situation. I'm not saying it's a crisis. It's terrible. It's just, ideally, you'd like to have gotten money for Eddie, who is good and should get you a fee, because a good English striker should get you a fee. And then you can give these minutes to Balogun, who needs to develop. And now we're going to have neither of those, which is just sort of weird. I thought Eddie was good in this game. And you see all the things he's good at. He is strong. He's got a burst. He can beat him in. He had that outside of the boot. He pins the defender on his back outside of the boot and turns and goes, right?
Yeah.
But you see with him that one little missing bit of being elite. He beats the man, leaves him in his dust, and then can't finish the move. He had another one where he shakes off a defender, you know, dropping in to that sort of false nine position, and Martinelli's free. And there's just a whole, I mean, the half of a pitch to play him in. Eddie just doesn't see it, doesn't give it to him. And by the way, I'm not saying every player sees it and every player makes it. I'm saying at the very elite, once he spins that guy and goes, you get a goal out of that. Or once he beats that first man and Martinelli's in, you play it in. And like, just a few situations in this game where Eddie did something that really impressed me. And then the last bit didn't quite come off. I think his combination of strength, pace, composed finishing, cleverness in the box. I think he's going to be a very reliable Premier League striker. It's not going to be for Arsenal. And, you know, we probably should have gotten a fee for that. But like, I guess what I would say is this game confirmed to me that he's a very good player. and also confirmed to me that probably, and again, he's still young by striker standards, but probably isn't going to quite get to that echelon where you'd really want to hold on to him. It's a tricky one.
I think it's going to be, I agree with you. I just think it's going to be closer than the people who
I agree.
Think he's going to rattle around the bottom of the Premiership and maybe play in the Champions. Like, I think he's really good.
You know what it is, Paul?
Very clever, good link up. Yeah.
If you said to me, Eddie goes on to have a pretty elite career, I would say to you now, that's definitely in the range of outcomes. I can see it. It's not there yet, but I can see it. I think it's in the much smaller range of outcomes versus decent, reliable, lower end of the table striker. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't think he's going to have an elite, but there's so few of them. But
that's true. Yeah.
He could flirt with it. And that's what I think he could be a really good mid-table striker.
I'll be curious. I'll be so curious to follow his career. And I think Tim is right that not getting a fee for him is a real shame because there's definitely a player in there. And maybe the real mistake was actually made a season before last when we didn't loan him out in January when he could have gone somewhere and really knocked the socks off of someone. Who knows? Then maybe we wouldn't have let him go because we thought he's our future striker. So who knows with this stuff? It's always tricky. Last little pieces here. Tim, I don't know that there are too many other performances that need to be called out. I would say this. I think Arteta, the club, the players, however you want to phrase it, deserve credit that the mood in the camp seems pretty good. You know, you see a club like United imploding, and we've seen teams implode before. And here you've got players like Kolasinac, who almost certainly, you know, the club would like him gone. Elneny, no real future at the club. You know, a lot of players, Callum Chambers starts the season, thinks, I'm going to be the starting right back, and now doesn't really have a role, comes in, scores a goal with his first touch, races to the touchline, mobbed by his teammates. The mood with this group seemed real good for basically the island of misfit toys of players at Arsenal right now. I think Maitland-Niles is a player I do want to get to before we get out of here, but just in terms of that dynamic, the camaraderie, the mood, the fact that you can put a heavily rotated side out with a lot of players that really aren't in the plan in a meaningful way, in Cedric and Kola and you know, Chambers coming on and Elneny, and still get that kind of, not just performance, but I would say sort of spirit that you saw in the group. I think there's some credit deserved for that, isn't there? I mean, especially when, to be fair, we've been a little harsh about his man managing. You know, is this guy a good man manager? Does he know how to keep people happy, arm around the shoulder? Well, they all look pretty happy to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And as much as a lot of these aren't like the first team guys, most of them have still had a degree of faith expressed in them. So, you know, Cedric was signed, by the way, on Arteta's watch. And then you've got like a player like Elneny who was really kind of out in the cold and had gone out on loan, and then kind of Arteta welcomed him back in. And Rob Holding got a new contract under Arteta, you know, was given a new contract by Arteta, and he was the captain in this game. And Martinelli's had a new contract while Arteta's been there. So a lot of these players, and you know, Nketiah, he's had his fair share of games. You know, he was in ahead of Lacazette, you know, either side of the first lockdown, around COVID. Like he's had good game time really up until the last 12 months or so. So like a lot of these players, I think are still kind of pulling for him really. There were some players like we had to get rid of, I guess, who perhaps, you know, were contributing to a sour mood in the camp. But also a lot of these players, like the ones that are definitely going to go, are playing for their next contract. It's not at Arsenal, but Kolasinac. We've seen it with Lacazette recently, Nketiah, Elneny. Like all their contracts are running down. They need to impress, and they know they're probably not going to get many chances unless there's a bit of an injury crisis. So, you know, a lot of them, they're putting themselves in the shop window, and that's absolutely fine as well. And someone like Callum Chambers as well, like Arteta's expressed plenty of trust in him. You know, he became the first choice right back for a little while. So really the only one that's kind of fallen out with Arteta is Maitland-Niles. But then in this game, he's playing in central midfield, which is where he says he wants to play. So,
and he's had a few sub performances there, and not just in cup games, you know, games that really matter.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
It's still done for him, I think, at Arsenal, probably Maitland-Niles. But, you know, he's getting some shots in midfield now. So, you know, he can't really ask for much more than that. He definitely can't ask to be the starting midfielder. He's being played largely as a midfielder, well, almost entirely as a midfielder now. So he's got to take his chances when they come. And he's another one whose contract isn't necessarily running down to a Bosman, but he's looking at his next club, he's looking at his next move. So I think there's a lot of that behind it. But you're right, that doesn't necessarily explain like camaraderie. You know, that it didn't look like a load of players playing for themselves. And yeah, absolutely. I think it's very fair to say that Arteta deserves credit for that, particularly because, as you say, we've criticised him for the opposite. So it's only fair to, I'm not sure if correcting the record is the right phrase there, but to give him his due.
Yeah, and the thing I'd say with Maitland-Niles, like, it's always hard, right? Because there are different roles you can have in a team. You know, there are academy guys like Chuba Akpom or Benik Afobe, and maybe Nelson is going to wind up in this category, who out on loan quite a bit, never really carve out their spot in the first team, don't make it at Arsenal. And then there are the guys like an Iwobi or a Joe Willock who, you know, have a role in the first team for a bit. Iwobi had a much bigger one than Willock, to be fair, but like don't hit the absolute heights of where you think you want to go and get a bid that's really a fantastic bid and great for the player and great for the club, and the outcome is welcome all around. But then you get players, I don't know if Gibbs would fall into this category. I'm trying to think who might fall into the category, but academy players who don't hit the heights, but carve out a real useful role doing some things in the first team at a level high enough where it makes sense to have them. And I think I didn't believe Maitland-Niles was that in midfield. I thought if he could be that, he could be that at fullback, Paul, where, you know, you get rid of a Cedric and Chambers moves on and Tomiyasu's your fullback, but Maitland-Niles can come in really both sides of fullback and be a defensive specialist. This season he's shown, and I have to confess, a much better ability to step into midfield, and even if he's never going to be a plus passer, be adequate and then do the other things he does well, carrying the ball, recovery runs, you know, looking more switched on defensively, you know, off the ball. Maitland-Niles is in that weird gray area where I don't see him ever locking up a place that's his in the first team, but I see him being the kind of player you just, I think as a coach, would really like to see sitting on that bench for a variety of solutions he can give you depending on what's going on in the game. So I thought he looked pretty good, and he continues to look like someone who has a value to offer the Arsenal first team if he's willing to sort of take the various openings that are available to him. I mean, do you think that's sort of a fair way to characterize what he's developing into at Arsenal right now?
Yeah, I mean, I'm with Tim. I think mostly I see this as a season of kind of mutual opportunity because his move wasn't right for us last year. I think, what was the plan? Everton wanted to loan him.
2-year loan? I mean, yeah, I don't, you know, that was what was
could we do anything to help Everton? No. It's one of those, if they want him, don't give it to them. I mean, on a loan. So it wasn't going to happen for us, and it probably wasn't necessarily the right thing for him either. And I would imagine they said, look, stick with us for the next season. We will play you in midfield as opportunities arise, and the AFCON will come up. So there's definitely going to be opportunities, most likely. And we will put you in a much better place in terms of shop window next summer. It'll be good for you and good for us, and we'll get you the move that works for both clubs in a better market, hopefully. I thought this was his best game for us in a midfield. I thought he was really good. He had his moments where he reminded me he's Ainsley Maitland-Niles, but most of the time he was doing the good things, the good passes. He had a bit of vision. He had a chance to show his athleticism, his burst on top of everything else. I thought he really looked the part. I think he's always going to be challenged by the fact that several times in a game, he does that thing where you can get, as a defender, it might seem weird, or as a fullback, it might seem weird to say that switching off isn't so much a problem, because you know when to be switched on as a defender. Like they're coming towards you. You're running towards your goal with the player you're supposed to be marking. And he's always got the athleticism that if he's half a second off, he'll still catch that guy typically. In midfield, you're on all the time, basically, in and out of possession. And I think, I mean, I would love for him to not that he needs to prove me wrong, but in my own mind, I would love to be wrong about the fact that he just has this flaw that he switches off. And I think Willock has it too, but Willock always has it when he's out of possession. He switches on when he's in possession. Maitland-Niles has a bit of it, but it's a different version of it. He just fairly regularly, he just looks switched off and not tuned in to what he needs to do, and he doesn't necessarily pick the cleverer pass. But Manny has skills. But then a guy with high skills has a lot of loose touches in midfield too. So he looks a lot better. I really enjoyed this performance from him. I don't see him having the quality that Sambi has. I think he has the skills and a lot of the ability that Sambi has. Maybe not quite the vision, but he has the skills. It's just he'll deliver a lot more flubbed passes than Sambi will, because Sambi's always in the zone and Maitland-Niles switches in and out of it. I think that's his major issue. And I think it's in his game now, because we talk about age and maturing and stuff, but you see some of these players like Sambi at 21, you see Charlie Patino, these guys coming through and they just have it from Smith Rowe. I mean, Smith Rowe isn't that much different. Saka isn't that much different to what he was a couple of years ago. It's not like they suddenly woke up and decided to be switched on and clever about where the game is. That's the piece they seem to have at a younger age. And Maitland-Niles for me has always had that vulnerability of the being switched off a quarter of the time.
Yeah. This is going to maybe sound crazy, but look, it's normal to sort of compare your academy players. They're very different players, but if you said to me, I had to have one of these players as a relatively prominent figure in a team, Maitland-Niles or Joe Willock, I'd rather have Maitland-Niles. I think he can do more for a team that wants to be a top four level team than I think Joe Willock can personally. Yeah. And like that, you know, maybe that's because Maitland-Niles is still here and Willock isn't. But I just think his skill set is a lot more versatile, but also the things he does well, I think can help us, can fill a void for us. So I'm happy for him to do it. We'll get out of here. But before we do, I want to just look ahead quickly. I mean, Tim, obviously, I said this is the time to shine for these players, and I think a lot of them did. I don't think it will have made a difference, right? I mean, there's no performance here that gets anyone into the mind of the manager for Leicester that wouldn't have been otherwise, is there?
No, I don't think so. And obviously, it depends on some of the injury situations as well. I mean, I guess Rob Holding played well enough that if Benjamin White is not 100%, then...
Don't go full Paul on us, yeah.
Yeah. But then, I think Rob Holding was probably pretty trusted anyway. I don't see that Maitland-Niles or Elneny will come into the team. For example, I don't think Pepe did enough. I don't think Martinelli did enough. I mean, Nketiah is not going to dislodge either of Aubameyang or Lacazette. Leno was good, but I don't think enough. And you know, I don't think there was enough for him in that game to do enough to dislodge Ramsdale at the moment. Kolasinac, fine, but again, there's just no way he's going to play ahead of Tavares, because Tavares is very much the future and Kolasinac very much the past.
And Tierney has a chance, right?
Where's that? Well,
to come back, I mean?
I think so, yes, yeah. But I think the fact that Tavares didn't play in this game probably tells you what that chance is. There were a few tells about the Leicester selection, and I think you can presume Lacazette and Aubameyang will play, and Tierney probably won't because Tavares was spared. So I think you can probably make those assumptions. And obviously Cedric hasn't really done enough to dislodge Tomiyasu, albeit I listened to the conversation you guys had about Tomiyasu after the Villa game, and I'm more on Elliot's side in terms of I still have reservations about him in possession. But that said, again, it's early, and I'm not in full meltdown mode about that yet, and I'm definitely not going to be clamoring for Cedric to take his place at this stage. So, in short, no, I don't think that this will have changed his plans for Leicester. And to be fair, I don't think there was, short of someone scoring, if Martinelli had got a hat trick, then maybe that you know, gives him pause for thought. But I don't think anything could have happened in this game really to change his thinking for Leicester.
Yeah, the one thing I will say to you, Tim, is that when I express concerns about players on the Patreon side of things, so that I am safe from the ridicule of listeners to the main pod, I would appreciate it if you don't out my concerns.
It's fine. I'm joining you. That battle. It's fine.
Fair enough. Yeah. And by the way, they were gently expressed. Let's just be clear. They were very gently expressed. This was not a writing him off. I think I did say at the time, he might be our third best center back and is our best right back. I'm not advocating for Cedric to play ahead of him or anything like that. Just a Styles thing, as I can hear Clive shouting at the podcast from wherever he is listening. So then it is Leicester the weekend. It continues to be the case, Paul, that this league right now, from fourth to 10th, is anybody's to guess. I said this on our Premier League podcast. Yeah, it's up for grabs now. You could throw all those names up in the air, and however they landed, you could convince me that's how the table will finish, fourth through eighth. We are 3 points off fourth place, and in fourth place is a West Ham team that has Europa League football. So there is no reason why it can't be full systems go. And the one team that you would still favor to be there, Manchester United, is in the middle of a brutal run. Manager on the brink, team falling out, best midfielder now missing for 3 games. So there's an opening here. These games against the likes of Leicester and West Ham and United and Everton, these are games that are going to really decide for us whether we're in the conversation for another eighth place finish, a top six finish, or even that potential fourth place finish. So you know, these are really the important ones. As much as we get the big energy for games against teams like Liverpool and Chelsea and Man City, these are going to be the games that matter for us this season. So it's a big, big game. I think we go into it probably just about in the better run of form, but I say that not really having much strong knowledge of Leicester. Do you have any sort of early thoughts on how you think this one might go?
Mm-hmm. I think, unfortunately, Leicester have just kind of worked out what their system is over the last couple of games.
Yeah, steadied.
Yeah, Johnny Evans is back, which may not scare us, but he's important to how they play. They've played three at the back the last couple of games against Brentford and before that Man United. And they thrashed Man United. Maybe that doesn't look so clever right now. But they beat Brentford in a tight game. And the other worrying thing about them is, like, Brentford gave them a really good game. You could look at that either way. But Leicester are now taking their chances. Mm-hmm. They don't need to create a lot of chances. They've been playing two strikers up front, which is kind of interesting. And they like playing against a team with a high line. This season, that's us. So it could be Vardy and Iheanacho very likely, with Madison just behind them, who's also hitting a bit of form. They've gone away from Harvey Barnes and Lookman as the wingers and switched to two up front and Tielemans and Boubakari, Soumaré, and Didi has been out, and so they haven't had to make that decision, but they've been playing with those two guys in midfield, and they can both ball a bit. So, you know, with Lacazette in the last game sitting on Douglas Luiz, well, there'd be two people he'd have to sit on in that midfield to keep them quiet. I think we'll have enough possession, but I think that Leicester will do what Leicester does, which is 2-3-4 times in the game, break things open. They went really long against Brentford on a regular basis, but then mixed it up or played through midfield as well. So they got a lot of different ways of playing you, even with just the one setup. I think we just got to hope that Tielemans doesn't blast one from the midfield. He seems to do one every 8 games, so we might be safe for a little while. But, you know, they're dangerous. That's who Leicester City are. But we're hitting a bit of form. But there's a good chance we'll be facing three at the back. And that's why I think Lacazette plus Aubameyang makes a lot more sense here if we're going to get through that.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, they've kept one clean sheet this season. It was the first game against Wolves. And then shipped 4 to West Ham, 1 to Norwich in a game that Norwich beat them on XG, and Norwich are bad. Only 1 to Man City, but almost 3 expected goals. 2 to Brighton, 2 to Burnley, 2 to Palace, 2 to United, 1 to Brentford. So, you know, Tim, as a final word, this could be a little bit of the immovable object, irresistible force thing, because I think we think of ourselves as being a relatively defensively solid team, even though I know the metrics don't show that, but a lot of that is obviously the Chelsea and the City games and what happened early in the season. And we've maybe not been the attacking force we want to be until very, very recently. Now we come up against a team that will absolutely challenge us in the part of the pitch where we feel we are strongest, and maybe give us opportunities in the part of the pitch where we feel we are weakest. So do you see this as being an interesting one? Because it will be a biggest challenge to the place, the biggest challenge to the way we play, in the sense that the thing we do well will be under strain, and the thing we have maybe not always done well might get a chance to shine, if that makes any sense. And I don't think it did.
Yeah. So I think it would be really interesting for a couple of reasons. I mean, first of all, you know, Leicester, whether we like it or not, we've got to come and take Leicester this season. However underwhelming that sounds, that they are a team we should be finishing above this season. We should have been finishing above them in previous seasons. We haven't been. So that's like, I don't know if I want to call it a scalp. I'm not sure if I'd go that far, but it's a little barometer for us. The interesting thing about Leicester is, as Paul alluded to, they still haven't quite sorted out what they're doing, because they kind of fell on this. That sounds unreasonably harsh, but they were doing this thing where a lot of people describe it as two up front. It kind of wasn't really. Iheanacho playing much more like Mo Salah, like starting out on the right, but as an attack develops, kind of moving much more central and cutting in on his left foot. And that worked for them until Harvey Barnes came back, because that's kind of what Harvey Barnes does from the other side. And so they couldn't have two players kind of doing that. And so they've struggled for, I know Brendan Rodgers, because they weren't playing Iheanacho until recently. And Brendan Rodgers said, well, yeah, because we lose too much midfield control. And then they went to Palace and he did it. And they went 2-0 up and everyone went kind of, ah, there you go. But then they got pegged back to 2-2. And what kind of outfit draws 2-2 at home with Palace? I mean, but Rodgers had a point, because though they started that game really well, they did lose control of it in the midfield. So they are still kind of fiddling under the bonnet with some things, and that they beat Manchester United in a very chaotic game. But what is beating Manchester United worth at the moment? But I'd suggest that United game really suited them, because, you know, United are quite chaotic and it was quite end to end and they were chasing something. I mean, I doubt they're going to get that from Arsenal unless something goes really wrong. Like, you look at our away games so far, what have you seen? Absent maybe Brentford and Man City, but Burnley tight 1-0. Brighton kind of tight, cagey 0-0. Like, I think it'll be a much more, I think if things go how Arsenal want them to, it will be a much cagier game. And I'm not sure how much that will suit Leicester. And obviously we managed to beat Leicester away last year. And I don't know. Like, I don't want to say I'm confident, because that sounds disrespectful to Leicester, because Leicester are still a really good team and they're still getting some decent results. And, you know, I wouldn't be like absolutely shocked if Arsenal went and lost it, but I'm actually reasonably confident for this. I do think we can give Leicester some problems in terms of structure. Like, I think this might be one of those games where actually being a very structured team might work in our favour.
Mm.
Which kind of sounds counterintuitive, as if being really structured is a bad thing somehow. but I
know what you mean. Yeah,
yeah. I tend to think that Leicester might struggle more with that than you know, if it was like if we were just swinging at each other.
Yeah, I mean, that 4-2 with United is such a weird one, and I find myself trying to understand what happened in that game and how it could have and what it could mean for our game with them. But I think it's best to just, you know, look at this and say, I like what we did in our last game, and I think not the League Cup game, the Villa game, and I think we should approach it that way again. My one worry would be, Can we be brave in the way we were against Villa away to Leicester? Would it be smart to do that? I mean, you might say this might be a game where actually sitting back and trying to counter them isn't so bad, but we've seen, like in the game against Brighton and stretches of the game against Palace, when we let ourselves get pushed back and those two lines get compressed and we're defending deeper, we can't get out. And I think we make life just really, really comfortable and easy for the opposition. So I hope the lesson learned from Villa is something we're brave enough to carry to Leicester, and we will see. And I'm excited to do that. We'll try to get a Villa rewatch for patrons tomorrow. So sorry for the schedule getting moved around a bit, but that is still on the agenda, I think. And I think we can leave it there. Just a quick, sprightly 82 minutes for you on a Thursday evening for us. So Tim's on Twitter at Stroberto. Thanks, Tim.
My pleasure as always.
Paul's on Twitter, Pause My Pants. Thanks, Paul.
Woohoo!
My name is Alex Smith. You can block me on Twitter at Yankee Gunner. Obviously, we'll have the instant reaction for you after the Leicester game. I believe Clive will be back for that as well. So lots more to come. If you want the Premier League roundup with Lewis Ambrose, that was yesterday. Villa rewatch, I think tomorrow. Instant reaction Saturday, main pod Monday. So plenty of stuff still to come. Hope you're doing well wherever you are. Happy, healthy, enjoying fall, having some kind of, what are we supposed to have? Apple spice something. Apple spice latte. Apple spice donuts, apple spice chicken, I don't know, whatever you like. Just have something apple spice. You are compelled by the gods of marketing. In any event, I will leave it there because I'm rambling. We love you, and we will talk to you after Arsenal 10, Leicester 0.